Hey, legends, you know, none of our interviews or episodes ever date, ever. They are all timeless and ready for you for when you're ready to listen. Download the lot and rip in. This episode is brought to you by our wonderful sponsors, Galaxy Finance. Sponsors and personal friends that I trust enough to go to with questions about my own finances. That's not a sales pitch, that's fact. Any questions, any queries, they have the solutions from home loan lending to complete financial planning. With official interest rates at an all-time low, the lenders want your business. With Galaxy Finance, they'll do all the work for you and find the best possible deal. They'll do it all. Get in contact, ask for Leanne, and mention Unfiltered for a free chat. A free chat. No obligations, a free chat just by mentioning Unfiltered. GalaxyFinance.com.au is where you can find them. The great ones, they're different. They really are. Not better, just different. Sure, there's a physical power, a mental strength, a complex but resolute constitution too. There's a whole lot more than just the measurables. That's something else, that intangible. It separates us from them. Welcome to the Legend Series on Andy Raymond Unfiltered. Respect isn't given, it's earned, and there's no easy way. However, the reward, it's infinite. This bloke had as much as any, deservingly too. But who is Monty Beetham?
Yeah, I guess when I think about this, and quite often, as you do as a former professional athlete, you look back and you reflect on whether it be the week gone by, whether it be the month or the year, and you go, who are you? The person you want to be. I'm a proud father of two, a guy who's getting better at being a father, which is a huge part of my life post-sport, man. Really love that. And then it's the second act for me in terms of over the years, I didn't please everyone, but there's a lot of people who still come up to me today and say, you know what? Thank you for inspiring me. Thank you for giving me some motivation and some of the sports that I covered. But for me now, it's on the second act, which is business and more important for Pacifica Business and for the brown faces out there to realize that they can make it in sport, but they can also do it in business and be highly as effective, man. So that's who I am, Monty Beetham, now today, on a journey and discovering what that's like.
That must be really rewarding, mate, for fans from yesteryear of all ages coming up to say thank you and thank you for inspiring or thank you for making a difference.
It is, man. It is. And it's, you know, when you've done a number of different things, you're going, you put them in the box straight away. Okay, this is a young person, so it's not going to be Dancing with the Stars, because if it's an older person, they like Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. It's going to be someone from league. Is it rugby? No, it's because I've done a few skits on YouTube with some of the hip people of today. Not these has-beens, the hip people of today that have throw a bit of nostalgia out there and they get some of the old boys involved. So it is nice, man. I tell you what, and they pick their moments. You know, like I said, I haven't always I've been that way for a lot of people, but the small people that have been affected or impacted by what I've done, man, it feels nice, man.
Give us a snapshot of Monty Beetham the kid. Who was he? What was he like?
Well, he was a sort of naive kid. He grew up thinking that everyone could be famous and that anyone could do what they want, because I grew up and everywhere I went, my dad was known. People knew of him. They said he was a legend. They used to love him, box and do everything. And he come from humble beginnings. So I thought, you know, what dad could do, I could do. So I used to shoot my mouth off all the time to him and say, Dad, I'm going to do this. Dad, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. And what I realized was from a very young age, before I even knew what a quote was, that my dad would share a quote with me that lasted me a very long time. And that was, son, don't tell me, show me. And that's something I learned very early on as a young age. And something I still use today. And I tell people that work for us or with us or kids, my own kids, and I just say, you know, don't tell me, show me. And that seems to be the thing. But the young kid grew up very ambitious. Thankfully, from a young age, knew that hard work beats talent when talent won't work hard. And he had this unreal belief that he could do anything. And that's probably down to my dad, who was, like I said before, was able to do some stuff from the world stage. But that's what you want. You want kids growing up who dream and then also have, you know, goals set in place and have a way to find it. But yeah, I was a kid that was just full of beans who thought he could do anything. So I guess that was a good way to start.
Speaking of Dad, for those that aren't aware, Dad was a recognised boxer, a British Empire champion. Actually, the British Empire Championship would go on to become the Commonwealth Championship, a record of 43-10. Fought Tony Mundine Sr., fought Josh Addo Carr's grandfather, Wally Carr. Most notably, fought at Wembley Stadium against the great Alan Minter. And Minter, just two fights later, would win two world middleweight championships. That is an unbelievable resume, Monty.
Absolutely. And, you know, over the years as a young kid growing up and through, you know, the 11, 12 years of age, I got to know a little bit more about him, and I got some of his videos, the content that would get thrown by, and I would see the likes of Wally Carr, and Tony Mundine fight wasn't there, but there was Ted Gray. There was a lot of very good boxers from New Zealand and that side of the ditch there in Australia, which is still continued to this day. And there were some fierce battles amongst them all. So, they're the real gladiators. There wasn't a lot of different divisions. The best fought the best. And that's all that mattered. Didn't matter what you lost or who you lost to. The fact is, you get on the bike, you have a go against another great contender, and you either effective or you're not.
Was your first love boxing, or was your first love footy?
Neither, man. Neither. I tell you why, because when I heard that Dad was going to, what Dad had done, my mum didn't want me to box at all. She had been through enough. She's been there ringside. She's seen it all. She didn't want that for me. But Dad used to put on all these karate tapes and that used to get him excited for his boxing matches. And then I got done for breaking pots and pans and putting some holes in the wall out the back because I was copying what I used to see on TV. So they put me in karate early on. And I think that was good for my mum too, because she thought if I go to karate, I'd never box. So I got into karate. My sister, she got into gymnastics, and she thought if she did gymnastics, I did the karate, we could teach each other. Then we could do what we saw on TV, these guys doing these flips with these karate moves, which were very dynamic, and then we could mix the two together. She ended up coming to karate, and we had a lot of fun. But at that stage, man, all I wanted to be was an All Black. That's all I cared about. I'd go to school. There was guys talking about rugby league, and I'd frown on that game. I'd say, "Hey, what are you doing? It is it's a woeful game. It is a poor man's brother's game, or whatever it is."
Yeah.
That is until I played my first game of rugby league, brother. I loved it. It was amazing, and it was the game that I enjoyed thoroughly, man. Everything about it.
You were a staunch union kid, as you said. It was a late start to league as a result. Was it John Ackland, perhaps, that introduced you to the Warriors? And I'm going to say maybe the season before they began in the competition. So we're talking 1994?
Oh, absolutely. But 93, because that year I come over, the first year I was really excited about playing rugby league, loved the game, was carrying on about it. But I just made a trial. That's all I did. Didn't even get anywhere close. Then I made a real goal of mine, you know, because to make that following team, that Auckland team the following year, made the Auckland team, captain it, made the schoolboy Kiwis. John Ackland, who was a wonderful man, wonderful coach, he used me as one of the early boys to be one of the first scholarship players within the Warriors system. And that was 15 years of age, straight after that tournament, and in 1993. So I was seeing the original headquarters being built up. It was quite an achievement, and we were hearing about which players were getting signed up. This was all before the huge hype that hit with everything that happened around the Warriors. You know, they were rock stars when they came in 95.
5'8" as a kid.
You can laugh. It's all right, man. You can laugh. It's cool. What I was early on was I was a very good talker, and I was really good at getting the people up and around me, getting the best out of individuals, you know, talking to them in a way that would make them want to run through particular players. I was a halfback at first, and it was easy, right? You just bring guys onto the ball, you tell them which lines to run, and this could be well before the line. This is nothing at the line playing unders or playing inside shoulders. This was nothing scientific, because when you grow up in the great game here in Auckland, you've got some powerhouses. So you feed them the ball early and you let them do their thing. And I was a great talker, a very good defensive player, And you know, I was really onto it with in terms of what you can do around the rules. Back then, you could rake the ball back, you could tap the ball forward with no marker, yeah. all that type of stuff. So I was really on top of everything you could do and really run the game in that terms. Could never kick a ball, but I didn't need to learn how to kick a ball because you're always scoring tries with all the amount of freaks that are in and around you. So yeah, started at halfback, schoolboy Kiwis. I was playing number six. And then, got signed up there at the Warriors and, you know, you slowly find your way out of a position, through a number of different reasons, through injuries, through personnel that come on. And, for whatever reason, you just got to make yourself useful or you've got to reinvent yourself to be in a position where, you're that much of a contributor, that they can't do without you.
You're listening to Andy Raymond Unfiltered, the Legend Series. We have corporate and private sponsorship packages available. You set the terms. For further information on how you can become part of the team, go to the website andyraymondunfiltered.com.au and hit the sponsorship tab.
We hear so many stories about really elite kids that go straight into first grade, that fairy tale grooming. It wasn't that. You had to work your ass off to get the chance in the seniors, and it took a number of years. There was also roadblocks. It was Frank Endicott, I think, that provided the first roadblock. I think it was Frank. Correct me if I'm wrong. He said you weren't wanted even before your first grade debut.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you think about coming into the grades, you know, like I was scoring three tries in final. I was made every Auckland team and Kiwi team possible coming through the grades, captain most of them. In 97, I was one of the protected juniors, junior Kiwi captain.
Yep.
So I, you know, there was a lot of talk about potentially having a very strong future, but then it stalled. I had an ACL injury. I was there underneath Frank. He had Shane Endicott in at the club. But at the time, I had something against Frank because I thought it was personal and I thought, you know, like he didn't know what he was speaking about or talking about. But you realize later on in life that it's a business. And for whatever reason, you may not be liked in that certain environment or amongst the other sort of players in and around you. At that time, I thought, you know what, his son's there in the same position as me, which is not good. That's why I didn't get the chance. But I think it all worked out well because I don't think I was really ready at that stage to come in. I definitely didn't want to come into competition playing at half or 5'8" because that was not the position for me. I was more of that combative guy who you had to work really hard. But before I got into grade, I had a number of injuries. Like I had a couple of ACLs and I played on without and had a lot of other sort of injuries that made it really difficult. So this young guy that was the captain and the half and pretty exciting player, believe it or not, coming through the grades, already before he even got to first grade, had to reinvent himself with all the injuries that he's been through and find a place amongst these bigger men in the forwards or wherever you can. You know, just really had to scrap for your position, you know.
You mentioned the ACL. I don't know if it's fact or fiction, but the story goes you played a year and a half with no ACL in your knee.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've done that both ACLs, but, you know, I was there underneath John Acklin, I should say, and there was no ACL. I had heard it, and I was coming off contract, and there was the whole, what do you do? If you have a operation now, you're gone.
Yeah.
You can't show your wares. You can't prove that you got the ability and have what it takes to play first grade. So I did play for that long period of time underneath that. Mark Graham came to the club. I actually tweaked it again just before the trials happened, before Mark had signed me. And so I was worried. I had a couple of sleepless nights out there thinking, geez, hang in there, Nate, hang in there. Because all I dreamt about as a kid growing up was I wanted to play for the Warriors. You know, I captained the Warriors 19s, captained the reserve grade sides, come through, born and bred in Auckland, love this country. That was my ambition from signing a scholarship at 15 years of age. And so many times I was so close to it not happening. Mark Graham came over, loved the way I trained, but he said, look, I just want to make sure you don't train like Tarzan and play like Jane. So I need to see you out on the field. And just weeks before going over there and playing, and halfback in that position because Stacey got injured, after tweaking the ACL and hoping that he wouldn't realize that the knee had swelled up that much that I had, you know, was losing functionality in my quads and that in terms of strength. It was crazy, but you do what you do. And thankfully, he signed me up. And I think a few games later, it went again.
How did you impress Mark Graham? What made him want to sign you?
Just the way I trained.
Yeah.
Like everything I do, like I just compete. And if you don't have the ability, you've got to compete. You've got to compete with everything. You've got to compete every time you turn up and you go across that line in training. You've got to compete to be on time. You've got to compete to do extras. You know, you've got to be taking notes. You've got to be showing him that you do have the right culture. And culture is something that is there and shown when no one is watching. Not when everyone is watching, you're doing the right thing. And I think that was embedded in me from a very young age, and my dad and from my grandma and everything else. And I think that really helped me out. You know, I was full of beans, full of energies. I remember Stacey Jones coming back from a Kiwi tour, him and Gene Namu and all the boys. And we're doing some runs up around One Tree Hill. And, you know, I was just took off. And Stacey was, mate, can you just slow down? I said, sorry, mate, I'm running for a contract, as I took off again and just left him behind and everyone else behind. You know, from a very young age, normally if a senior player goes, hey, man, slow down, you listen, you take advice. But I was that competitive and I wanted to play for the Warriors so much that the hero or the idol of mine, that was Stacey Jones, when he was telling me, hey, man, just slow down, I said, sorry, bro, I'm gone. See ya. And I think Stacey used to call me King of the Hill back then. But they have a bit of fun in and around that. But yeah, you just got to compete. Like I'm a big fan of quotes, hard work beats talent when talent won't work hard. So, you know, like if people are sleeping and you're working, it just makes you feel that much better. I was doing a bit of work with Jimmy Spittle just before the America's Cup, doing a lot of training with him. And he's a great athlete, top 2% of athlete that I've worked with in that. He's the same, mate. His high performance mentality, his quotes, his, you know, not letting people down and working when others wouldn't work. My wife teased me. She said it was like a bromance that we had, but we were just so aligned. It was beautiful.
Do you carry those professional traits into your personal life in terms of values and ethos? Is Monty Beetham the person as hardworking, as dedicated, as structured, as uncompromising?
I am a creature of habit, and I have to be, because that's high performance. High performance isn't talent. It is a work ethic. It is a meticulous process, and is effort on effort. And every day when you have that effort on effort, it builds up to becoming something pretty impressive. You know, like I'll go home, I'll have my gear packed out, ready for the morning. I've got my food sorted, my breakfast in the microwave, ready to go, oats, everything else. I think the high performance that I've taken from sport, and in particular rugby league, the NRL, because you've got to be process driven. You've got to have the right ethic to make it an NRL. Otherwise, you get eaten up. I do that now, like in business or in life or everything, you know, because there's a big problem around mental health or well-being. And I attribute me going out there and exercising and walking to making sure that I'm in the top of my game. I always saying, if you're fighting fit, you see things happening. You're able to cope. Things that would just normally get you emotionally aren't as effective or hitting you as hard because you're in a good position with yourself, you know. And if you feel good about yourself, you can feel good about others. Love yourself before can you love anyone else. So I've just always been that way, man, and I think it holds me well.
I love it. I really love it, Monty. That's so positive. And it'd mean a lot to so many people, that type of value system. Let's wind the clock back, mate, to round one, 1999. First grade debut versus the Sydney Roosters, a special day. What stands out?
Oh, look, straight away, you know, the players that I take their field with, Stephen Kearney, Matthew Ridge, Stacey Jones, Gene Numb, like these are the guys that have been posters on my wall. These are the guys that I was, you know, ball boy for at one stage. Huge Monday night football, baby, against the Roosters at SFS. That's what it was called back then.
Yep.
And I don't know how many lunchtimes I had where I used to pretend I was running off my left foot and stepping. Freddie Fittler. I was a big fan of his, a big fan of Laurie Daly's. And to, you know, play alongside all those wonderful players that I mentioned, but also against a guy that I looked up to and pretended to be every lunchtime.
Yeah.
Man, it was huge. It was exciting, man. And it was like it took so long to get to this particular point. I just it was amazing, Andy.
This episode is brought to you by our wonderful sponsors, Galaxy Finance. Sponsors and personal friends that I trust enough to go to with questions about my own finances. That's not a sales pitch, that's fact. Any questions, any queries, they have the solutions from home loan lending to complete financial planning. With official interest rates at an all-time low, the lenders want your business. With Galaxy Finance, they'll do all the work for you and find the best possible deal. They'll do it all. Get in contact, ask for Leanne, and mention Unfiltered for a free chat. A free chat. No obligations, a free chat just by mentioning Unfiltered. GalaxyFinance.com.au is where you can find them.
Then what happened with you and Freddie in that first game?
Like, I tell the story, right? Like, only in sport, you debut against an absolute legend that you've loved for so long and you pretend to be every lunchtime at school. A melee breaks out, and then I punch my idol in the face. Because he put a head-high shot on Ali, or was it vice versa, and Freddie had a go at him, so I punched him, and then Scotty Logan came across, and then it was all on with myself and Scotty Logan straight away, mate. You don't pick a guy out that big, but, you know, when you're in the moment and when you're so excited about making your debut at SFS, a reasonable crowd against the Chooks, and Brad Fittler, man, it was hard case. Incidentally, bro, I've got his last Australian jumper because I played against him down in Wellington, over here in New Zealand, of course.
Yeah.
He was 13, I was 13. He signed it for me. What a legend, absolute legend that Freddie is, and I still see him to this day. Only in sport, right, where you can have that moment where at one stage you only dream of meeting this guy, you get to play against him, you punch him in the face, you become great friends, great rivals. Not that he ever looked at me as a rival because obviously he had bigger fish to fry. But then many years on, you got his test jumper, you sign it, and then when you see him out and about, you have a chat or you have a beer. That's only in sport, man, the greatest game.
Gee, I hope Freddie did keep some of his stuff because I've actually got his last State of Origin shorts signed with a wonderful message on. So between the two of us, we've got quite the Brad Fittler Museum starting to grow. Mate, around this time, there were new owners of the Warriors. There was financial concerns. There was future concerns. Coaches in, coaches out, players in, players out. Hard to be focused and improve individually and collectively when you've got instability and uncertainty. That's how it looked. It was a tough time.
It was a tough time. It was easy for me to stay focused because I wasn't one of these guys on big contracts that had just signed. A lot of these guys had signed huge contracts, and these contracts may have not been honored. Or a lot of these guys had their plans in place for a number of years. I was just a young guy. All I wanted to do was play rugby league and play for the Warriors. I believe I was overseas when I heard the Warriors had been bought. We're at the 2000 World Cup. And then Daniel Anderson got on the phone and he spoke to us a couple of times and he was watching us and making contact. I was excited. I heard the stories too, though, that there was only like six balls at training. And then I was listening back as much as I could to some of the stories that were coming up in and around it. So I was like, wow, it was all new to me. I just wanted to play. I was excited that Matthew Ridge was involved. We had some new guys. Eric Watson was a new shining, the knight in shining armor. Yeah. Exciting for me because it was still fresh. It was raw. I haven't been proving myself. There was new people to prove yourself to. And so for me and a lot of the younger guys that were playing there, especially in that Tall Samoa team at the time, like the Fafili and the Mellies and that who were new to it, we just wanted to play. We didn't have a lot of skin in the game in terms of huge contracts and not really knowing who you wanted to coach or have any sort of understanding of what was good for the club at the time. But it turned out to be, you know, pretty good.
As a collective, you turned uncertainty into a wonderful period of great success. You'd make the finals for the first time in 2001, and the city of Auckland, the country of New Zealand, fell in love with rugby league and went nuts. And we will look back for decades to 2001 as the year rugby league changed in New Zealand, I believe.
It was awesome, man. For a very long time, the jokes, the memes that were going out in and around being a Warriors supporter, and not having made the playoffs, you know, because I guess when people look at it, you only have to win 50% of your games to make the playoff.
Mm.
So, you know, and as hard as that is to do, for most people who don't understand how difficult it is to be in the best competition in the world, and I know I've got a huge bias to that, to win 50% of games is hard, especially here in New Zealand, and haven't done it for the first time yet. So it was funny because we were playing the Melbourne Storm. It was over there, Colonial Stadium. The stadium was closed, and the game was coming to an end, and we were winning, but I think Melbourne came back, scored a try, and I think it was my mate Henry Perenara, that they kicked the goal, and it was a draw. Full-time whistle went, and we had our heads down, and we were pretty sad because we missed out on an opportunity, because we're all about opportunities. We're all about ticking boxes and getting ahead. And then the runners came out and said, "That's it. We've done it. You've a draw is enough. You're through to the finals." And it was just, you know, I remember that because it was a tough game against the Melbourne Storm, and it was just elation for a lot of us, you know, Kevin Campion, Cleary, and a lot of the younger boys that were coming through that had the pleasure of being in and around Ivan and Kevin Campion. You know, the leadership that they brought, the guys that you wanted to be around, even Matthew Ridge and that, like, who was in a sort of a bit more advisory capacity. These were the guys that you wanted to rub shoulders with and you could be around all day and talk to. But that moment in itself was amazing. I can tell you what, it was one hell of a party that night. It was all a blur now, but doing something so good for the first time was huge. So it was pretty amazing. But I think in the following weeks, I broke my leg when I shouldn't have been playing, and then I was out of the first playoff series ever. I broke it against the Cowboys, I believe.
You mentioned Kevin Campion. We've done a Legends series interview with him, a guy that probably doesn't receive the recognition that he deserves at a number of clubs. He was a difference maker. He set standards that very few could do.
Absolutely. Once again, he's high performance, no shortcuts.
Yeah.
And he would lead the way, and he would pick you up. It doesn't matter who you are. He would pick you up on anything. And that's culture in itself. The fact that he had won rings and he bought the ring in, and he knew that he would get me all excited about seeing the ring, which I wouldn't touch because obviously I hadn't won anything, and I was of that sort of nature where I wouldn't do that. But he was just the guy to be around. And don't forget, he came from the Broncos. Growing up as a kid, we're watching the Broncos. Mm. There'd been the Yardstick, Wayne Bennett and Saylor and Webke and all these guys, Lockyer. You know, like, that was one of the favorite teams of Kiwis growing up, and it was huge. So that was a massive time. But then when I look back at big moments as well, I guess the captaincy that was given to me at a very early age.
Yeah.
You mentioned 2001, the co-captains at the time were Stacey Jones and Kevin Campion.
Yep.
The respect I had for both men were absolutely huge. And we made the playoffs, right?
Mm.
Left that year, Mick Watson calls me into his office and says, "You're going to be the captain next year." And I, whatever, because it's not going to be the case.
Yeah.
And I thought it'll just wash off. And then the following year, he called me in and said, "You're going to be the captain." And I said, "What? Are you serious? This is real." He rang me up one day and says, "Are you going to get a phone call tonight? It's going to be Daniel Anderson, and he's going to ask you to come and meet him tomorrow, and he's going to announce that you're captain." But I just act surprised. And I say, "What? What?" So worst actor, mate. Ando rings me up and goes, "Monty, is that you?" He goes, "Yeah, I want you to meet me tomorrow." And I was hopeless. I said, "Why? Am I in trouble, Ando?" Hopeless. And "How do you want to meet you tomorrow?" And it was at Upland Road Cafe in Remuera. And even though I knew what was coming, to hear that for the first time, that you were going to be captain, was absolutely huge. I was the youngest guy then. I was 24 at the time I had that captaincy. Unfortunately, I got injured. But it was crazy because making it for the first year and getting it over those two was absolutely huge. But, like, that's the class of Stacey Jones. When I went and saw him the first time, he timed it well because I was sitting down and he was towering over me. He was standing, of course. And he said, "Mate, I heard you're going to be the captain, mate." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And he goes, "Oh, I don't think you're going to boss me around." And then he just, you know, let me know that it was all right, that it was fine, and that's good. So That was a big, big, big moment in my career, and it was made easier because of those two absolute legends who are fine leaders in their own right, who were able to stand aside, albeit briefly, for a younger guy born and bred to lead the team around.
We hope you're enjoying this edition of Andy Raymond Unfiltered. The Legend series drops at the start of your working week. It's in-depth, personal, and highlights some of the game's finest from yesteryear. The weekly Wodge drops in time for your weekend. It's full on and the hottest podcast on the market. Why listen to opinions when you can listen to interviews with the stars? And on every episode, you can hear up to a dozen different players and coaches, both past and present, giving their thoughts on the great game. It's fast-paced, full of footy and laughs. It's a must-listen. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. That way, you won't miss a thing. Every episode will drop immediately. Before you go, we'd love a 5-star rating and review. It's not for ego, it's for business, as we look to expand the Unfiltered brand and bring you more. Make sure you come back soon. Legends.